Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, before we get into today's episode, episode 671, I just wanted to apologize to my co-host on this episode, Carl Alvarez from the Inside Metal documentary series. Carl, so sorry, dude. I know we recorded this probably like a month and a half ago, maybe even 2 months ago. I am so sorry it took me so long to put it together and get it up. It's just been absolutely hectic. My life has spiraled a little out of control, and Talking Metal's been busy, but work has even been more busy, family and all that, you know how it goes. So anyways, my deepest apology that this is a little dated at this point. You'll hear us, Carl and I, reference the Easter holiday, or it being April. Obviously, it's almost June at this point, so there you go. Might even be June by the time you guys are listening to it. It's nonetheless a great episode, and we play some great music and share some great stories about hard rock and heavy metal, the classic old stuff that we all love here on Talking Metal. So stay tuned for that. Guys, Emily and I, and possibly John Astronomy, I'm not sure about that, will be traveling to Nashville, Tennessee for the Rock and Pod Expo. It's going to be a great event. I cannot wait to see you guys there. A number of you have mentioned you're coming. And it's all your favorite podcasts, Decibel Geek, Rock and Roll Geek Show, of course, Talking Metal, Talk To Me. There's going to be a bunch of us there, as well as some rock stars and some cool dealers who are going to be selling vinyl and other things at the convention center. It's going to be awesome. I have three slots for guest spots on Talking Metal. We will record the episode while we're there in Nashville on August 26th. You can be a part of it. We've sold one of the three. I'm a little surprised we haven't sold more than that at this point, but there's two more left. They're $75 each. It's a donation. Doesn't go to me. It goes to the guys who are running the convention center. I'm totally doing this on my own dime. I just like what these guys are doing, and I want to support what they're doing, and I want to be there to hang out with you guys. So having said that, there's a GoFundMe page, which is linked through the show notes for today's episode, 671. If you go to talkingmetal.com, go into the show notes, you'll see it. It's GoFundMe, and it's for the Rock and Pod Expo. If you make a $75 pledge on that, and you note that you're doing it for a guest spot on Talking Metal, you will record an episode with us in Nashville. And listen, even if you can't make it to Nashville, make the pledge there and we'll hook it up on Skype or something. How about that? It's only $75. Two slots left. Once you make that pledge, since I don't run that GoFundMe page, just drop me an email. Let me know that you did it. My email is mark@talkingmetal.com, and we will figure it out. Either we'll record it in Nashville or we'll do it beforehand on Skype, all right? $75 to support the Rock and Pod Expo and get a guest spot on Talking Metal. Of course, we talk about whatever you want to talk about. We play the music you want to play on that episode. There's also some other cool deals there that you can check out, some incentives, I guess they call them. And Chris from Decibel Geek has really spearheaded this whole thing, and a big hats off to him. Hopefully he'll come on the podcast soon. We can catch up with him. All right. So let's get into the episode right now. Remember to use our Amazon links to support what we do here. You can also use our PayPal tab to send us a little donation. And one of the best things you can do is visit talkingmetal.com and participate in the interaction there by using our comment section. Love to hear your comments on the episodes. Even if you thought an episode sucked, you thought I was calling it in, let me know that. You think that we're doing some great interviews, let me know that. You know, cool. I just want to hear from you guys in the comment section on talkingmetal.com. And we have news and all sorts of stuff going up every day. There's updates on that site. Mitch LaFon's podcast is there. Metal Raps, Talking Rock, which I'm just about to relaunch. It's been, I think, two, three years since we've had a Talking Rock episode up. I've already got an interview in the can for that, so stay tuned. More Talking Rock stuff on the way. It's all there on my website, talkingmetal.com. Thanks so much, guys. Here we go.
Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast, home of all things hard rock and heavy metal. I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. Now, let's get things started with the Talking Metal theme song, written by Rob Halford, Metal Mike, and Roy Z.
Welcome to another edition of Talking Metal, and once again, back for the, third or fourth time, Carl Alvarez from the Inside Metal documentary series, a great, great watch. If you haven't seen it, you can buy the DVDs. We'll have them linked through today's show notes. You can also watch it on Amazon Prime. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Mark, this evening, and I'm glad I'm here talking with you, so it's a great pleasure.
I will mention to the listeners that we just spent 10 minutes or so trying to get Skype working, and for reasons we won't go into right now, it's not working. So what I did was I'm just calling Carl on his cell phone, which is why his connection isn't crystal clear like it usually is. But I think it's good enough to do this. And what we're going to do tonight is talk about Chance Encounters. Carl sent me an email back a couple months back, and back in January, and it was filled with so much good stuff. And I said, you know, Carl, you have to come on and talk about this stuff. So I think this is his third time back talking about that email that you sent me with all this great stuff in it. And if I'm not mistaken, I think your fourth time on the podcast, because the first time you came on more to hype the Inside Metal documentary series, which is just awesome. And before we get into today's topic, which is inspired by your email called Chance Encounters, any updates on Inside Metal since I spoke with you last? How's the next edition coming along?
Yeah, it's coming along pretty good. It's out of my hands right now and in with the editors who are really doing all the bells and whistles and all the fancy stuff that goes into a movie. So I would say we're progressing pretty good. I think we're pretty much on track and having a release date in June, but that's TBA to be announced if that's the case. We're cool. Still kind of like probably 65% there to really kind of know, but it will be released in two parts. We've kind of determined that now there's enough content to where we're kind of laying the groundwork as the previous editions with episode 1, 2, and 3 in two parts. So and those will have separate release dates. So I anticipate the end of June. I'm not saying that's hard, but June and maybe a fall date for the second one. So, but details will be forthcoming.
Cool. It's at some point I want to have a conversation with you, maybe offline, not on the podcast. But I'm fascinated with the distribution you've gotten for Inside Metal with you know Amazon Prime. You can stream it on there. You know, it was on Access TV, and besides the documentary itself being impressive, that's impressive just on itself. You know, Eddie Trunk did the host raps when it aired on Access. I mean, these are major platforms you have gotten an independent documentary onto, and I commend you on that. And also, I'm just curious, I mean, how can you talk about how that actually happened? I mean, how do you get an independent documentary on Access TV?
Well, that's a good question. And it's probably more close to our executive producer that probably had more inroads into that, getting it on there. Now, I'm not sure if they approached him or he approached them. That's the big question.
Right.
All I have to say is I'm happy it's on there.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And in fact, they actually renewed future episodes. So what actually has been on is actually the first part of episode 1, which is the Pioneers.
Right.
I don't believe they've aired part 2 of that. They definitely haven't aired episode 2, part 1 and 2. So
right.
Those are in the works. No dates yet set.
Okay, good. Well, that's awesome. Because I loved part, you know, the first episode, the way the Pioneers one, but I really loved the second one because, I mean, that was kind of my era of when I, you know, was into those bands. And, you know, we've spoken about that before, but great news, and I hope that happens for you. Anyways, today's topic is Chance Encounters, and it's basically Carl and I talking about different times that just by chance we ran into heavy metal gods and hard rock heroes, if you will. And we're going to talk about that. But first, let's get into a little music here on today's episode. I want to go way back to a band called Malice. This is Rockin' With You.
In the
What you just heard was the band Malice with Rockin' With You. Carl, a big Malice fan?
Oh, yeah, I dug Malice. They had something going on in L.A. They were kind of the beginnings of the second wave, I should say, with the Armored Saints and the Black and Blues, and a little bit after Motley Crue. But they kind of, Mick Zane actually moved down from Oregon, and his first show, this was before he died, he had correspondence with us. Wow. He had saw YNT at the Whiskey in 1982. He saw, and this is when they had two shows in a night. He saw both shows.
Wow.
And I know where he was coming from. This is 1982. The scene was really kind of really starting to build up. But before Quiet Riot's Mental Health, before all the big explosion, but that's when it was really in. It's kind of percolating bubble, you know, and Mick Zane was out here watching YNT, Dave Menichetti, and the late Leonard Hayes and that amazing drum kick
wow.
foot that he had, the double bass kick, you know, yeah. the single pedal.
Y&D drummer,
doing
yeah.
it, you know. So,
yeah.
Yep. So rest in peace, Leonard, and of course, Joey Alves, who passed away recently, and Phil Kennemore, who passed back in 2011. So, yeah.
Right on. Cool. Let's get into our chance encounters. I haven't heard this story from you, and I'm looking forward to hearing it. The chance encounter that you mentioned to me has to do with the Comedy Store, Metallica, Guns N' Roses. Can you talk a little bit about what went on, when this went on? And I have the email in front of me, and if you forgot when it went on, but yeah, go for it.
Well, this is interesting because it was around Easter. It was Good Friday, so we're Mark and I are talking, and it's before Easter
yeah.
of 2017. But this encounter was in 1988. It was Good Friday, I believe. Oh, I know it was because my sister came down and her husband at the time, and we kind of did like a LA excursion, you know, because they were visiting from out of town, and we did, you know, dinner and the whole bit, but it's like, okay, we're going to the Comedy Store. We're going to see a good comedy show. So we went down. You know where the Comedy Store is on Sunset Boulevard? It's right by the Hilton.
Right.
It was right across the street from where the House of Blues resided. It
okay.
wasn't there at that time. This is going way back. But there was actually a tattoo parlor that was there, too, a famous tattoo parlor. I can't think of the name, but it was very popular on Sunset Boulevard. Nevertheless, so we see our comedy show, and this is right around the time when And Justice for All was being recorded in L.A.
Right. So we're talking 1988, almost exactly 29 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm actually with my sister, and we're actually leaving the club. So this is like maybe 1:30. Now, let's kind of rewind back to what 1988 was on Sunset Strip. Where the Comedy Store is, it's not really where the music scene is happening. So it was kind of like, it was kind of a quiet evening. It wasn't like, you know, even the comedy club was kind of, it was kind of light in there. So the Comedy Store is away from the Whiskey and the Roxy and the Rainbow, maybe about 4 or 5 blocks away, even from Tower Records, the old, good old Tower Records on Sunset Boulevard. So I'm walking out. We're all walking out, and it's about 12:30 in the morning. And I see, and I turn around because I was kind of leading from my sister, my brother, and my sister and my brother-in-law. And I turn around, and I see Lars, I see Slash, I see Guff, I believe.
Wow.
And two other people, and they're just kind of huddled in this area. It's kind of like a smoking area, I guess, outside, or
right.
kind of just kind of a hangout area of the Comedy Store. And, you know, it's interesting. I know once I turn around, they knew and I knew who they were.
Right, yeah.
It wasn't like they were kind of hiding in the sense that
they knew that you had spotted them.
Hanging out. Yes, they definitely knew. I mean, I looked Lars straight in the eye and just seeing them, I know they were kind of just, you know, I think the whole thing, what I walked away from it, because it was so brief, they knew I had long hair at that time, so they knew I was hip to what they were, and they were hip to, I guess, maybe what I was, I guess, the way I was dressed or how I looked. But what I walked away from that, and it was a brief, maybe a minute, 30 seconds encounter, but what I walked away from it was Lars recording, Metallica recording Injustice for All, this big record in April when the record was released, was kind of after Monsters of Rock, you know, that big show that they did across the country in Van Halen. So this is kind of leading up to that. But seeing both of them, it was interesting because these kind of powerhouses were kind of teaming together. And you know, obviously later when, you know, when the Black Album came out and when Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, it seemed like the seeds were being planted even back then.
Right.
You know, back in 88. You know, and this big Monsters of Rock tour, another stadium tour 3 years later, whenever that tour was, the Black Album, 91, I guess, 92. And, you know, it just made me think more about these alliances that were being forged. And, you know, I'm sure this was the beginning or right around the time when these things were being forged, you know.
Right,
so
yeah.
That's kind of what I walked away from it. Like, okay, this is kind of, this is their little, their forging of their forces coming together, you know, and respect, mutual respect being shown, and hanging out in this, with, you know, other rock people that are on that caliber, you know. So I really appreciated kind of having that glimpse because they were out of the spotlight. They were not wanting to be discovered. They were wanting to be in their own little cocoon. So I really kind of really bustled with it for just that moment and really kind of swept through and swept out of that, of their encounter. So it was kind of, it felt very good as years went by, you know, how that was.
Yeah. It's
even
awesome.
If it being, albeit being brief.
Yeah. And the Comedy Store, of course, is, you know, the one thing I know about the Comedy Store, you know, being a guy who's not from LA, is that it was very associated with the MTV personality of probably a few years after when you ran into these guys at the club. But Pauly Shore, I believe his parents opened the club, and I think his mom ended up winning the club in a divorce settlement, and she ran the club. So Pauly Shore, I don't know, the Weasel. Remember him? Our younger our listeners probably don't remember who he was, but
Misty Shore was running the place, and at any given moment you could actually see Sam Kinison just do like a late night set, just, you know, completely coming in there riffing and doing just a blistering set just out of nowhere. I mean, those sorts of things happen, you know.
And yeah, I heard stories of Carson, you know, who at that point was at the height of his career. I mean, everyone watched Carson every night, you know, your grandma and your little brother. But it's like, you know, he would sometimes go in there and test out material and was frequently would, you know, be just hanging out, eating or having a drink there. So, yeah. Amazing place.
So if I plan to say I'm going to Hollywood, I'm going to run into some rock people, my probably first place was I'm going to go to Whiskey or I'm going to go to the Rock
Rainbow. Yeah,
never the Comedy Store. That's just like, that's like unheard of. But I think at that time Lars was probably staying at the Sunset Marquee, which is down the street from there, which is kind of the rock. A lot of the rock people stay there, and it's tucked away from Sunset Boulevard, and it's kind of a little. I don't know, a desert island of hanging out and not being bugged type place, you know, and it's fancy and it's nice and it's got all the creature comforts. So I know he was staying there when they were recording Injustice for All. And at various times I ran into Slash. He was home. I wouldn't say he's homeless, but he would stay at the Le Mondrian, which is also across the street from the Comedy Store, which a lot of rock people stayed there too. There was a lot of encounters that to hang out there too, and I'd see Slash there all the time, you know, and yeah, I think that's where he was just staying, you know.
cool. Let's get into a little Metallica right now off the Justice for All record. This is Harvester of Sorrow. Little Harvester of Sorrow by Metallica. That was a song that I believe when I saw them, before that record came out, I saw them on the Monsters of Rock tour, and they had played that song live. And again, that was before, I believe, the album was actually released. So good stuff. I wanted to mention one of my, and I, you know, if you've listened to this podcast for a while, you may have heard me tell this story in the past, but I was with John Ostrowski, a.k.a. Astronomy, the guy I founded this podcast with, back, it had to be, I'm guessing, 93-ish. It could have been 92. I'm not sure. But we were in New York City in part of the island of Manhattan called the Village, the West Village, actually, which isn't quite as hip as the East Village is. But we went into this bar that was a metal bar that we used to go to, and it was called the Scrap Bar. And it was this underground thing that would have Hell's Angels hanging out. Rob Zombie would be in there. You know, a lot of like the Cycle Sluts from Hell, these New York sleaze rockers and metal people and rockers.
Raging
and
Slab, maybe?
yeah, very possibly. The Raging Slab people were a Pennsylvania band who were in New York all the time. Anyways, we would be hanging out there, and well, this one time we were hanging out there, we walked in, and who do we see at the bar? There weren't a lot of people in the bar, but Lemmy, just sitting there drinking who knows what, but probably a Jack and Coke, knowing Lemmy. But we approached him and we said, you know, big fans, you know, love Motorhead, and just complete dorky fanboys approaching him. And he was, I wouldn't say overly nice to us. He was a little guarded, you know, but he listened to us talk for a while and he didn't say much. And then he turned to us and said, "Do you guys play pinball?" And we were like, "Oh yeah, sure." He's like, let's play pinball. And we went back and we played pinball with Lemmy. And then we decided it would be the cool thing would be to buy Lemmy shots. And we said, "Lemmy, what do you want? Some shots? We're going to get some shots." And I swear to God, he did not want shots of Jack Daniels. He requested shots of tequila, which we did numerous rounds with him. And it ended up being, for us, a very drunken night. I probably not at all for Lemmy, because he can probably hold his liquor a lot better than us, or could at that time. But, you know, after the pinball game, we had some conversations. I remember talking to him about Ozzy, and I was, you know, at that time, it was right after Black Sabbath with Dio. Dio split, and it was right after Halford filled in for Dio. And then I think it was at the end of the show, if I'm not mistaken, Ozzy came out and did four songs with Sabbath. And it kind of hinted at that they were going to be reuniting. Now, Dio had split the show before because he was pissed. He was pissed that they were going to do this reunion with Ozzy for four songs. And they kind of had announced that Sabbath was going to do a reunion tour, and then it ended up not happening. And I remember asking Lemmy about that just because it was topical at the time. And I knew he was friends with Ozzy. And I said to him, you know, I'm disappointed that they're not going to do the reunion with Ozzy, because it had fell through after this four song reunion that they did at the end of the show, where Rob Halford had filled in for Dio because Dio was pissed that they were going to do this thing with Ozzy. So anyways, I asked Lemmy about this, and I said, you know, I'm really disappointed because I've never seen Black Sabbath with Ozzy, and I just wish they could have gotten their act together and did a tour with him. And he stood up for his friend, Ozzy Osbourne. He was like, "What do you mean you never saw Ozzy with Sabbath?" He was like, "He was in that band for over 10 years and you never went and saw them. So it's your fault. It's your fault. You know, Ozzy shouldn't do anything Ozzy doesn't want to do, you know." And I didn't have the heart to tell Lemmy that I was, you know, 8 or 9 years old when Ozzy had left Black Sabbath. So, you know, but it was interesting to see how devoted and just to some random fan that Lemmy went out of his way to stick up for Ozzy. And I always thought that was admirable trait. And it was, you know, and again, the time I spent with Lemmy that night, probably, I mean, it, you know, I like to think that it was all night, but it probably was less than 30 minutes, you know, but we did, we played pinball with him. We drank with him, had conversations with him. And it was something that I've always remembered and always cherished. And it was before the days of cell phones. So there was no selfies, no pictures or anything like that. But I swear on my life, that's how it went down. And it was fun night and awesome memory. So anyways, back to you, Carl. Chance Encounters, Warrants, Janie Lane, and a woman who I thought was just beautiful back in the day, Bobby Brown. Let's talk about that. What's your chance encounter with these people?
Wow. this was the marriage of Janie Lane and Bobby Brown. This is at the height of Cherry Pie, maybe right around the height of Cherry Pie. It was a wedding that took place, and I can't think of the hotel. It's near Sunset Boulevard. You had to go upstairs. Actually, it was in downstairs, but they kind of had it upstairs, the wedding itself, and then downstairs they had the reception. So we showed up for the reception, and we're kind of mixed in with a lot of family people and music business people and some actors, I guess. I don't know if you remember Richard Grieco. He was in 21 Jump Street.
Vaguely.
Popular show. He was there. I'm sure he was friends with Bobby Brown. I'm sure that's why that was the case. But I saw, what's the bass player from L.A. Guns, I can't remember his name, Nichols. Mm-hmm. He was hanging out. So it's a mixture of family and just friends and people in the music business and the Warrant family guys, band, whatever. And so I actually sat down, it was my brother and I who went, and I sat down next to Bo Hill and Fiona. I don't know if you remember Fiona. She was recording with Atlantic Records, and her and Bo Hill were an item. I don't know how long they had been an item, but they were there together.
I remember Fiona. Now, Fiona was also, I think, briefly involved. I may be wrong in this, but Bob Dylan. I think her and Bob Dylan were an item at one point.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. We see that happening. Fiona was the nicest, most genuine rock girl I've ever met. Just really nice. Really. And Bo Hill was a nice guy too. Sincere people, you know, just like, hey, how are you doing? How do you know Janie? Oh, this and that and the other thing. And they were just, it was really nice actually to sit by him. It was by chance. I didn't like go, hey, there's Bo Hill. Let's sit over there.
Yeah. I remember Fiona. I had heard her on Rockline with Bob Coburn, and that was what caused me to go buy her record. And there was a cute picture of her on the front of the record. But yeah, never became a household name, but she definitely got a push from the label and put out some good music.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of some kind of notable things. It was a typical wedding, more or less. But, you know, you got the feeling that this was kind of like a mini rock dynasty that was being built. I mean, obviously Bobby Brown was just the video vixen of that moment, you know, and Janie Lane was the rock dude, you know, at that time, you know.
Yeah. Was there a lot of press there? Because I, you know, worked at the MTV library. Let's see, this is what, 91? Is this when the wedding was? I'm trying. Yeah. So I was, that was when I just started. I just started at MTV, and I was a tape librarian, you know, before the days of digital downloads, everything was on tape. And I specifically remember entering into our computer system, the camera masters of like a camera crew that had been at the wedding. And there were like three or four tapes of shots from the wedding. I think I even had looked at the tapes a little bit. I remember like Bobby Brown with the bridesmaids and stuff. So do you remember a lot of press being there?
I think that's what I was saying. That was upstairs where the wedding was happening.
Right, okay.
So we went directly downstairs for the reception. We didn't even go to the wedding event. So, but it was just back to back, you know, and we just, you know, were at the reception and stuff. The cameras could have been there. You know what the weird thing about it was?
I'm
going to tell you. It's just something that just came out of the blue. Okay, we're kind of in this MTV world now. I mean, that's kind of what I'm feeling when I'm at this wedding, and I'm kind of just being a voyeur more than anything else, but it seems right out of MTV, you know?
Yeah.
At that time, you know, if you remember MTV in 1991 or 90, it was like the show Remote Control, and it was just everything was coming at you. You know, the videos were on 24 hours a day. So I just feel like I'm in that world at this. And the person I see who comes in a little bit later as the night progresses, he just crashes the party, is Bobby Brown, the urban guy.
Right.
New edition guy.
Right.
He shows up.
The My
like,
Prerogative guy.
Bobby
yeah.
Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah, my Prerogative guy. And here's Bobby Brown with a couple of his bodyguards and his friends. They just come in and it's like, oh, there's Bobby Brown, the video vixen, and Bobby Brown, the guy that's on MTV that every little step.
Well, that's
guy.
It's interesting that you mentioned that because I did read Bobby Brown's book, the female Bobby Brown, and she mentions that she was friends with him. And she even claims in the book, I guess Bobby Brown's daughter that he had with Whitney Houston, who actually recently died. I think she died after Bobby Brown's book came out. But he claims that Bobby Brown, My Prerogative, Bobby Brown, got the idea for B-O-B-B-Y as a name for his daughter from... You know, Cherry Pie, Bobby Brown. That's what she claims in her book. So, yeah, that's wild that she was at the wedding. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Yeah. So, could I give you any more tidbits? I'm sure a lot happened, but, those are the highlights I would imagine. So.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. And were you a fan of Warren? Like, how into them were you?
Well, I was in the music business at that time. So, was I a fan? I probably was not a fan in terms of maybe an Iron Maiden type fan, but I was a fan of rock music. So it was nice to be there, albeit kind of in a more of a kind of a frilly sense of a pop metal sense. I did enjoy it and I do enjoy some Warren songs. I can't say I'm a super fan, but it was a cool encounter. It was something I remember.
Yeah. Warren's interesting. They're a band that at the time I was at that time in my life, I was getting away from that type of vibe. I mean, I liked Guns. I still liked, you know, my metal like Maiden and stuff, but I was definitely at that time getting into other stuff like, you know, Alice in Chains and Soundgarden were coming out at that point. And I mean, Alice in Chains had been out a while, right? Faith No More. I was even going to bands like Fishbone and stuff. So at the time I never really embraced Warren. I mean, I liked Uncle Tom's Cabin when I saw the video, and it wasn't like I hated them, but I never like bought the Cherry Pie record until years later. I went back, and it was then I really discovered Warren. And I do think for a commercial metal hard rock band, whatever you want to call them, they really had some talent. And right now I'd like to play a tune off of Cherry Pie. It's not Uncle Tom's Cabin or I Saw Red or Cherry Pie. It's buried a little bit deeper down in the record, but this is a great song. This is called Mr. Rainmaker off of the Cherry Pie record by Warren.
Time. 'Cause I'm bombing.
What you just heard was Mr. Rainmaker by Warrant. I have been chatting with Carl Alvarez tonight, who is the producer of the Inside Metal documentary series. The next edition, Carl, is Thrash, right?
Yeah, it's going to feature a lot of luminaries, some people that have already kind of made an appearance in previous episodes, obviously like somebody like Lars, but we got some people that haven't surfaced that will surface in episode 3, talking about the Thrash era. We got Rocky George, obviously, of Suicidal Tendencies.
Oh, cool.
We have quite an array of different people. I mean, they're not all coming to me at the time. Bill Metoyer, the producer of those early Slayer records.
Oh, nice.
Talks about how the process of how they were recording and the early Slayer days and how they were kind of these misfit guys that were just troublemakers. And they were having fun, though, and they were forging their own thing, the beginnings of them taking over the world in terms of the whole thrash thing. So, so it's going to offer up a lot of different, this kind of underground thing that really hasn't been talked about in LA.
Cool.
Which really was kind of the early roots of what thrash was and turned out to be for the West Coast, really,
yeah,
if you think about it. So,
awesome.
Everything that led up to that. So, yeah, though. But it's interesting that we've talked about Metallica and we've talked about Warrant. Somewhere along the line, I don't know if you knew this, and I'm pretty sure this is because it's come up. I remember it being talked about. But Joey Allen, the guitarist of Warrant, was friends with Lars at one time.
Oh, wow.
Early before they were, they were kind of hanging out, buddies and stuff. So, So I can't offer up more how that turned out and why that was. Or
no,
it was
interesting
just a brief kind of friendship, but. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, well, good stuff. Carl, thanks as always for joining us. We're going to have you back again in a month or so. And at that time, I want to talk to you about the club days and some of the bands that you saw before they broke in the clubs. And then I will talk about club shows and some of the bands I remember seeing before they exploded, which probably won't compare to your list, but... it'll be a fun chat, and I'm looking forward to that. And in the meantime, everyone needs to go watch Inside Metal. The first two episodes are out, and they're a great history lesson that I believe everyone here who listens to this show would really get a kick out of. So, Carl, thanks again. What should we close out today's episode with? Any songs we can play for the Talking Metal listeners?
Well, I kind of think my mind has been going to Sunset Boulevard, and this 1988 vibe, could you pull out L.A. Guns' Sex Action?
Oh, of course. We'll close
the
show with that.
Vibe I'm kind of feeling. Yeah, exactly.
Cool. And we'll have links up in today's show notes for the Inside Metal documentary series, which Carl produced and or is one of the producers on. And we'll also have your Twitter handle and all that good stuff on the show notes. In today's episode, you go to talkingmetal.com, you go to the Talking Metal section, and you'll find all that stuff there. And we also, guys, we post news now on talkingmetal.com. I wouldn't call it breaking news because we can't compete with Blabbermouth. We work day jobs and stuff, but we do get news stories, and we try to add opinions and personalities to those stories. We have a bunch of writers now on board with us, and these guys, I really enjoy reading their stuff, and I would love it if you guys went over to the site and checked out our news section. We also do an On This Day section where we mention historic rock and metal events that happened on that particular day years before. So check it out, talkingmetal.com. Check out Inside Metal, the documentary. And this is a little LA Guns here on Talking Metal. Talk to you next time. Thanks, Carl.
Thank you. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you soon.
I'm thinking about the coming attraction, the wink of an eye. You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.